The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to the next exciting, thrill-packed, I'd say that too, hilarious.
You're just full of adjectives today.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is. Episode of the Babylon Project podcast. I am here tonight, as always, with my good friends Jim Arrowwood and J.P. Harvey. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Awesome.
Doing great here, too.
I've got my voice back.
Also awesome. Yay.
Yes, we noticed. Still, you are not permitted to sing.
Yeah, what was that old joke, you know, Doc?
I don't know. There's lots of old jokes.
Doc, when I get over this, will I be able to sing? It's like, well, no reason you can't. Oh, good. I've never been able to sing before.
Okay.
Yeah, you knew that was coming.
Ba-doom boom.
So, Jim, what episode will we be talking about tonight?
We are looking at Sic Transit Vir.
Sic as in S-I-C, not S-I-C-K.
S-I-C, that is correct. Latin, as a matter of fact, it's Latin.
Right.
And I dug up something interesting, and actually the title, if it's translated from Latin, has nothing to do with vir whatsoever.
Explain.
Really? Sic transit vir means thus passes the man.
Yep.
Okay. And vir is Latin for man. So it just happened to sync up, I guess.
That Latin aspect was part of the inside joke in naming the character.
Yeah. Okay.
But thus passes the man. Really fitting for this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little lighter episode after some of the heavy stuff we've been dealing with.
Well, some of it is light. Some of it is not very comfortable at all.
Of course, that's something you would expect from Joe Straczynski.
Yeah.
Well, let's not waste time. Let's go ahead and get a synopsis, Jim.
Coming right up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Vir is surprised when he receives a visit from a Centauri woman who is to be his wife by arranged marriage. Vir had no idea that his uncle had this relationship arranged for him, but when he sees how seemingly nice the girl is, he warms up to the idea. Later, while walking together, Vir and Lindesti are attacked by a Narn assassin, but Zack steps in and kills the Narn. It was assumed that the assassin was targeting Vir, but as it turns out, it was actually Lindesti that was being targeted. Lindesti's father was an executioner on Narn after the war, and Lindesti was allowed to take an active part in the killings of Narn citizens. One of the family declared a Shankar, a blood oath, against her. When she is attacked by another assassin, she manages to subdue the Narn and offers his life to Vir, who of course refuses to kill the assassin. When Lindesti offers to do it, Veer manages to stop her. She leaves the station confused by Veer's compassion for the Narn, but still caring for him. While in residence on Minbar, Veer has been up to some business that could get him in a lot of trouble. He has created an alter ego called Abrahamo Lincolni, and under this name, he has been forging transit papers to get Narn citizens away from the harsh environment on Narn to Centauri Prime, where they are supposed to become slaves. Veer further has been forging death certificates for those bound to the Centauri homeworld so they can travel to other worlds and have freedom. When Londo learns of this, he is appalled and arranges for Veer to be recalled to Babylon 5. Ivanova takes on the work that Veer has been doing. Sheridan invites Delenn to a private dinner in his quarters. However, his attempt at preparing Flarn for the meal are somewhat less than appetizing. Well, there it is.
I like the way you put some of that. Awesome. Awesome. Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy.
Yep. And I'm sure people can see where the discomfort's going to come in.
Oh, yeah.
Character files opened.
So who do we have playing in this one tonight?
Yeah, we don't have a large guest cast today.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen Thomas is playing Lindisti. It's her only appearance on Babylon 5, and really about the only thing she has going for her in the genre would be she's a voice on the Halo 2 video game and just basically uncredited additional characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, her primary gig, I believe, is as a casting director.
Yeah.
So it's bits and pieces here and there where she's actually in front of the camera instead of behind it. So.
Right. We also see Damian London again as the Centauri official at this point. That's how he's titled. And this is his second of 9 appearances on Babylon 5.
Right. And forgive me. I've said this before. Forgive me if I get in. If I'm still in the habit of referring to him as Minister.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. Do we ever get a actual name for him?
We do later on.
In the series, or is it in the books?
No, I think it's in the series. I can't tell you exactly when, but it comes in when Cartesia is around, also.
Right.
Okay, and then under featuring, we have James Jude Courtney as Narn number 1, and I assume that was the one that was captured. Well, I'm not sure. Was it the one that was captured or the one that Zach dispatched? I don't know.
It's probably the attacker.
Okay. He appeared as Gior on the TKO episode.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, I never made that. Wow.
Yeah. So, that is our guest cast for today.
Mm-hmm.
Initiating plot analysis.
Let's just say, what a way to start the day.
Oh, my goodness.
Poor Susan.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
You know what really makes that whole scene work, though? It isn't just her straight face, but when you look at the way the crew actually played it.
Oh, yeah. It was perfect.
It almost makes you wonder if they weren't told what was going to happen.
Well, I seriously doubt she actually walked out in front of everybody in the buff, but...
Oh, no, sure. And you can, obviously, from the way the cameras are shot, that, you know, clearly not.
Yeah.
But if she was in a swimsuit,
one of her last lines here is let's get this show on the road. Would seem to me that the show had already started at this point.
Oh yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. Let's see. And then we get a quick chop off after her scream to Veer petting the throne. Oh gosh. And he gets caught by the minister. It's almost surprising. Veer has that easy of an access to the throne room. Prophetic in a way. Of course, he knows what's going to happen in the future, too, at some point. So, Not who knows true. What's going through his head.
True.
But I like the way the minister views Veer's reports, recognizing Malari's old school help.
I thought that was a neat bit of encouragement to Veer, right? Did Malari help you with this?
Yeah.
I forget how he said it. I'd like to see you express yourself or something to that effect. That was really good.
Yeah. But in any case, Veer is vindicated at this point. They wanted accurate information and not an embellished Londo report.
Right. Oh, gosh. And the Narn joke at the end. One angry Narn with the key.
Yeah.
Gosh, love the minister. You know, and then right after that joke, Veer opens the door, and that's a lot of Narn.
Oh, yeah.
Look angry.
Yeah. Well, it is definitely a holy crap moment for Veer.
At least that's sure what it looks like at the moment.
I had to wonder if he wasn't dreaming or something.
That's what I thought at first when I saw this. You know, what's going on here?
and that was pretty much the whole point of the setup for that.
Yeah.
And after the credits, you know, speaking of dreams, Sheridan's advice, no help at all.
It starts well.
Yeah.
It doesn't end well for Susan.
her day just keeps getting better. did you notice those lunch trays, all the fresh fruit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know at the very least I saw kiwis.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Kiwis are much more difficult to transport than a few coffee beans.
Are you sure they're not just now growing it on the station?
Well, okay, entirely possible. They've got miles and they've got a lot of square miles of growing real estate.
Yeah, and that was Susan that was having the fruit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. Where do we go from here? Londo and his bug. Oh gosh, his call to maintenance. Do you have that? That's some classic Londo.
Oh, yeah.
Maintenance, can I help you?
Yes, you can help me. 2 hours ago, 2 hours ago, I called you. I told you there is a bug. An insect in my quarters.
We've been a little busy.
Now you listen to me. I do not like insects. I do not like little brown things with 8 legs. I do not like anything with 8 legs. Well, except for the Vinzini. But only because they are terrible at cards. Something to do with compound eyes, I think. I want this thing dead.
Sorry, Ambassador, but due to the recent changes in our status, we've had to cut back on our inspectors. Time to time, insects are going to get in. We'll get somebody there as soon as we can.
Now, don't hang up on me. Don't hang up on me. Hang up on me. Stop! Centauri, you triple damned. Do you know that you are smaller than I thought you were? You are smaller. There are more of you. There are more of you! Yes!
Paso Learte fights again.
Yeah.
He picked that sword up and I thought he stabbed a date.
What the heck is that on his sword? A hairy potato?
I don't know what it is. But I'll tell you what, that sword is the one he received from Urza.
Yes, it is. Oh, my.
Now, can you imagine being the young lady who just arrived, standing outside the door and hearing all this?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I tease Antonio about this one. It's like, yeah, Lando sounds like you here, except for the fact that Lando isn't squealing like a girl.
Oh, no. I'll tell you what. You know those times a year when the flies are trying to get inside because the seasons are changing? Yep. That is the way I sound in my classroom with a fly swatter. Die, die, die. Splat, splat. And keep missing them. Yeah. So, yeah, I can totally relate.
No, I get that. I get that at night from my wife.
Wait a minute.
Not her hunting, me hunting.
Oh, I was going to say, Anthea beats you with a fly swatter and says, oh.
I get the teasing from her. Actually, JP's comment about what's the girl thinking, because one of our fly swatters is pink, and it's like, okay, I'm in my underwear at night. For some reason, they love our bathroom because we've got this big bank of, like, 10 fluorescent lights above our sinks and dresser, so the UV spectrum kind of draws all of the flies into that particular area.
Ah.
And, yeah, she's been known to tease me about hunting flies at night.
Okay. No more stories about you in your underwear. Right.
And this is not the entomology podcast.
JP picks up on that one quick. Yes.
Yeah. Well, then, pretty girls. You can talk about pretty girls.
Yeah.
Lando's day is definitely looking up. I think JP already kind of mentioned that.
Yeah, she looks better than a bug.
Yep. She makes Bald look good. Well, yeah.
But she's not there to see Lando.
Oh, he doesn't know that yet.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
We're not going to really find out what her purpose is, though, for a few more scenes.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, the very next scene, we've got Delenn and Sheridan planning their next, actually more like Sheridan because he's asking her about their next date. And boy, you know, just two episodes, we've got, if you value your lives, be somewhere else. Going from there to, let's just say she's taking the art of flirting to a whole new level there.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting.
Do you have this one?
Good morning, Delenn.
Captain, how are things with your government?
For the moment, blissfully quiet, at least so far as we're concerned. President Clark's having a hard time keeping everything bottled up back home, so we're not on the top of his list of priorities right now.
The resistance?
Gathering their forces, putting their people into place. With everybody busy planning their next move, we get a break. It'll be short, but I'll take it. Which brings me to you.
Me?
Yes. You know, every time that I have seen you lately, we've been in the middle of a crisis, a revolution. It's the first time in months that it's been this quiet. It won't last. It never does. But as long as it's here, I'd like to see you tonight.
Are you not seeing me now? I would think that you see me every time we meet, unless I have become translucent or insubstantial, and nobody has thought to inform me until now.
And let me say, I'd like to see you in a different light. Candlelight, for instance. Over dinner?
Tonight?
Tomorrow we may be involved in another crisis, another battle. This may be the last chance we'll get for a while. You know, back home, we have an old saying. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Humans can be a very depressing people.
Only if we get turned down for dinner.
Well, we cannot have that. How can we?
There's a lot of steel hidden behind the girly girl exterior there sometimes.
She's good. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
What is that old saying, the man chases the girl until she catches him?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of girls catching men, we find out why Lindesty is here. Veer got married.
Uh-huh.
It just seems someone forgot to tell him.
You know, and Londo is absolutely hilarious because, you know, he saw her at the door and she wasn't there for him. He's having way more fun than he would have had otherwise.
Oh, yeah. And Veer's little fat finger wave.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, but she starts talking and, you know, she appears as somewhat of a ditz.
Naive, innocent ditz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Naive.
I don't know about naive. I just thought bubblehead.
But it's Centauri. It's an arranged marriage for status. And this scene has one of my favorite lines from the entire series, one that I have borrowed and used for probably close to 20 years now.
Uh-oh.
Kill it before it develops language skills.
Ah, yes, the bug.
The other bug.
So it's evolving before his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's got a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Londo. That bug thing is a little more than just the normal fear of the bugs. Poor guy.
Well, you know, actually, eight legs, you know, perhaps it is an extension of a fear that he has for maybe shadow vessels, too.
Right.
Multi-legged things that go bump in the night.
Well, the shadows had, well, three legs, two arms, but...
When you have a shadow vessel coming at you, you don't care if it's arms or legs. You just want to get the hell out of the way.
You just want to be out of the way.
You just want to kill it.
Uh-huh.
Well, we kick back over to Susan's bad day. Yeah. Zach's got something to report, but he's also got a bit of a knack for digging a hole for himself.
Well, he's standing there in all the glory of the universe. Looking out the port and talking about how small he feels and how
naked
he feels. Poor Susan.
And actually, I get what he's talking about. If you've even on Earth, if you're somewhere a couple hundred miles away from any sort of light pollution in the middle of the Mojave Desert, you can appreciate. You can appreciate that sentiment.
Yeah, but I keep my clothes on.
Thank you.
Yes, I know what this body looks like. I don't need to inflict anybody with it, so.
Well, Zach's purpose is it seems that there are Narn disappearing, connected with a Centauri named Abrahamo Lincolni. And there's this knowing look that passes between them, and that's about it.
Uh-huh. Well, obviously, they would know that it's a human name.
Mm-hmm.
Abrahamo.
Clever. Maybe not the best name to conceal what's going on, but clever.
Uh-huh. We switch over to the discussion with Lindisty, and I love this comment about Veer's got many virtues, but not to hold those against him.
And he's smarter than he appears.
Definitely. Definitely. And she is absolutely a girl on the prowl.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, and the flounder expression.
Is that where she plants one on him?
Yeah.
I absolutely love that line. Oh, boy, if kisses were weapons, that one would have flattened several cities.
Yeah.
And then what was the dialogue about the fever?
Oh, gosh. I almost wish we had gotten Jim to get that.
No.
Veer says something to her, and her response was, "Let me be a fever from which you never recover."
Oh.
Yeah.
Good night, nurse.
So... The bubblehead is working with a purpose now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, girl on a prowl. Oh, gosh. And Veer doesn't seem to be fighting it too hard, at least.
No, not at all.
But he does have to leave. He's being called in to Susan. And it turns out that, he's the one who's been transferring the Narn to Centauri Prime.
Yeah.
He explains that he's just trying to help get some of them in better conditions.
Mm-hmm. You know, that is just so typically Vere. That was no surprise whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
The surprise part was that the Narn were disappearing and it wasn't something more sinister.
Well, yeah. Yeah, though it, like you said, if fear is involved, you wouldn't expect something sinister.
Yeah.
Though, bear in mind, then, this is one of the things that Straczynski comments on about this, is that, you know, not everyone in Germany during World War II what seemed to be absolutely horrible people. It wasn't, they weren't all Mengele sending them the Jews to the concentration camps, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them were just wireframe glasses, bean counters, doing their job, going home to a wonderful wife and kids.
Yeah.
Good people trying to be good people.
Yeah. Oh, we definitely get a shift to a Schindler's List sort of theme here.
Yeah, as we progress, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
This little scene, too, to me, and it may be more, I'm making more of it than it is, but, you know, we've seen, two episodes back now, we've seen Malari show that he may not be the same guy that we've kind of pictured him as from the start. Same thing with Jakar a few episodes before that, you know, or, you know, maybe I have those two reversed, or, you know, you're not the man that I met 2 years ago.
You've got
now we've got this this guy who's almost a prop a lot of times for Malari, who suddenly shows that he's got some real talent. Got it that we were told he's going to be the emperor someday. But the guy's kind of a cartoon, and suddenly he's running, he orchestrates and runs an underground railroad.
Successfully.
So now we see another main character who may not be all that he appeared to be from the start.
Yeah. You know, but we've had little glimpses of exactly what you're talking about, JP, throughout this, a lot of episodes. I mean, when Vere got sent by Malari to talk to the Technomages, Vere sat down and told Morden exactly where he wanted Morden to go.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Vere has had these little glimpses of having some backbone that he really didn't get much credit for from anybody else.
Right.
And now he's really showing some backbone.
And I wonder if some of this, at least this time, was enabled or empowered or encouraged by the comment back at the throne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the discussion about, did Londo help you with this? Well, yes. Yeah, we could tell, or whatever the dialogue was. And then he's encouraged to show more of himself in the things that he writes. And not that I think the Underground Railroad was running before this, but it's just kind of neat that, for me, the Vere character kind of bloomed at this point. There's no more little hints at what he may be. We're seeing him run full force now. He's still a humble guy.
Hence the title.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But for me, watching the show the first time, this was a turning point in my own mind about Vere, the character of Vere.
Yeah.
Well, up until this point, He had largely been, I mean, with Jim's examples, he had largely been Londo's conscience.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, as you're pointing out, he really blooms into his own person.
Yes. You know where the seeds for this were planted?
Where?
Think about it. Seriously. Think about the elevator scene with him and Jakar. And he says to Jakar,
I'm sorry.
Exactly. Jakar cuts his hand and has the blood dripped out. How do you apologize to the dead? Well, here's how Vere apologizes. He tries to save lives. Mm-hmm. And you know what's funny? I haven't seen that mentioned anywhere.
Until now.
They don't have you writing on for it.
Yeah. I haven't seen that connection made, so it may be something that maybe it's not a connection at all.
No, it's profound. It's definitely because you saw how that impacted Veer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't a matter of fear for his life. It was just the shame and humiliation for his people.
Well, you know what makes it even better is Veer is not looking for any credit or any thanks for this. He's just doing it.
Right. Almost makes the title sort of an irony. Not it shouldn't be thus passes the man, but thus riseth the man.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good one.
We shift now to another disaster. Speaking of flattened cities, Sheridan's Kitchen. It's like, okay, is his cooking going to be any better than the shape of his kitchen?
Nope.
Nope. He makes Delenn Flarn, at least in theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love this scene.
I wonder what they did to that tofu to get Delenn's face to do that.
I don't know. Maybe she's just a good actress. That's all.
Of course, it's tofu. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
So it might have just been a natural reaction. Not the biggest fan of tofu. Unless it's a miso soup. That's okay. Anything's good with enough salt on it, right?
Not necessarily. I have never had tofu.
It's bean curd.
Yeah, soybean.
Do you need to say more?
Soybeans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I drive by fields and fields and fields of tofu every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's bland.
Okay, well.
It's great in miso soup, that real thin Japanese soup.
It's good with other things or not at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll opt for that second
JP,
option,
you got
JP.
It.
I'll take the not at all, thanks. Just give me a heart hamburger. I'll be good.
There you go.
Heart attack grill.
Mm-hmm.
I might know where one of those is.
Well,
ah.
Oh, no. I don't think I could eat one of those things, though. It just looks greasy.
Yeah.
It'll change your life. it may end your life.
Yeah,
right.
I'm sure that would make my cardiologist really happy. Guess what I had, mm-hmm. Doc? Guess what you're going to have?
Right. Triple bypass.
Yeah, really.
Well, their dinner is interrupted. For Delenn, that might not be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because someone attacks Veer, an angry Narn.
Yeah.
No key, but a very big knife. Very close to Sheridan, he dashes in and buys time before security arrives and kills the Narn. But one of the last things he does, the Narn that is yells Shankar,
mm-hmm.
a word we've heard before.
Yeah, as we learned many episodes ago, that is a blood oath.
Right. He will kill his target or he will die trying.
But why go after Veer? I mean, what did Veer do?
Well,
it's a little bit of a confusing thing at this point.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe knowing what most people know. I mean, we saw the meeting with Veer where his activities, his honorable activities are exposed. But at this point, I suppose an average Narn, if that's what this guy is, and he's about what it appears that he's about, is if I can't get to Veer's boss, I'm going to get Veer.
Well, that could be.
Yeah, you at least it certainly appears some sort of a connection to that Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
Veer seems to just accept it, though, that for some reason he's a target.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is an ambassador. He's connected with Londo.
Yes.
So you're probably on track.
And he has a hair crest.
And he has a hair crest. Lindesty certainly thinks of him as a hero out of this. And the fact that he didn't even hesitate to put her behind him, knowing... Let's face it, Veer has to know he's not going to be that great in a fight.
Hmm.
But he's still, well, he's Veer. He completely selfless, puts himself between her and the threat.
Yeah. You know, when this whole thing is over, Lindesty comes up with a line that kind of puts a little bit different light on her. You know, she says about the Narn, you know how they are.
The veneer cracks just a
bit. Yeah, we're getting a glimpse now of some ugliness coming out.
Mm-hmm. There was one odd line spoken in the fight that tips, I think, would tip the first-time viewers to consider there's something else going on here. And before the Narn dies, he says something to the effect of, "I knew if I hung out here long enough, I'd find the killer." Now back to what we know as viewers of the show versus, you know, what somebody, the average man there might know. Mm-hmm. Veer could be associated with the deaths of a number of Narn. What we know because of Abrahamo Lincolni is that those are not real deaths. Right. But it was interesting that this guy utters words, a phrase something like that. I knew if I hung out here long enough, I would find the killer.
Ah.
But it seems like it's, you know, the writers gave us the events in the show in the order that we got them. So we know Veer's not a killer. I think we know Veer's not a killer anyway.
Oh, yeah.
At least that's what we're really, really hoping.
You know, the mystery.
At this point, you're thinking maybe it's some sort of misunderstanding
based on the front for the Underground Railroad, or there's something else going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not exactly over either, because Veer's in Susan's office again, and she's grilling him because it seems there is another Narn around to finish this blood oath. And Veer absolutely hasn't the foggiest idea of why.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually notes that he's, you know, he hasn't been anywhere doing anything. He's been with his wife, which opens up one of the absolutely funniest pieces of dialogue in the entire series. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame we can't have the visual of this, because during part of it, she's like trying to walk away to escape, and he's following her around the room like a lost puppy.
Oh, yeah.
So picture that in your mind as we're going through this.
What do women want when things get, intimate, you know?
I really don't think that we should be having this conversation, Veer. I mean, isn't there someone else?
There's only Londo, but I don't think that's a good idea. And since, you know, you're a woman, I thought maybe you might have some ideas.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, there's no single answer to that, Veer. I mean, every woman is different. But if she's your wife, well, you must know a few things about her.
Blank slate.
Oh, well, there must have been other women before this.
There were other women, but I never got past one.
You mean first base?
No, I mean one. You see, we have six... We have six, you see, and each one is a different level of intimacy and pleasure. So, you know, first you have one, and that's, and then there's two, and then by the time you get to five, it's like...
I got it. I really don't know what to tell you, Vera. I mean, I've never really gotten this relationship thing down myself, okay? So I'm the last person in the world that should be giving out advice on this sort of thing. All I can say is that enthusiasm, sincerity, genuine compassion, and humor can carry you through any lack of prior experience with high numerical value.
Wow. I'm gonna remember that. Thank you. Thank you.
The editing part of it,
and even the other, even when I rewatched the episode, just the other day, I missed the high numerical value remark, and that just struck me just now. So,
oh gosh, it's a brilliant piece, mm-hmm. Brilliantly written, brilliantly acted. It's hilarious.
Yeah, but we know now that Susan doesn't really do relationships very well.
Oh, we've noticed that already. Yeah. Not exactly wouldn't exactly be at anyone's top of the list for Dear Abby.
Yeah. Poor Marcus, he doesn't have prayer.
No. Oh, and JP is sitting very quietly.
Is that bad?
Only so far as
I was thinking about the irony of Vera asking her for advice after her confession to Delin.
Gosh. Yeah. Strikeout. Well, Vera's not the only one who's getting some scolding and advice. Delin's scolding Sheridan, and yeah, there's definitely some romance in the air on Babylon 5 this week.
Yeah.
Susan's bad day continues, though. Her timing just totally sucks.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's gone from imagining herself naked in CNC and then Zach's comment and not able to help Vera with any advice, and then she interrupts the... Yeah, I'll tell you what. She just can't win.
No. If I'm watching this and Anthea's there, she'll just yell at the screen, "Just kiss the girl!"
No.
I think Sheridan was enjoying the scolding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. But there seems to be a serious problem with Vera.
He gets called to the principal's office.
Vera has had 2,000 Narns sent to Centauri Prime. That's how many people have been funneled through Mr. Linconi. And they are all listed dead. Of course, Lando's fine with that.
Watching his reaction from the start to the end of this particular scene is pretty amazing.
He goes from "please just punch now" to less than.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, we get a real quick cut into the commercial with the Narn tracking, that second Narn we're talking about tracking Lindisty. And it almost leaves, he's like, okay, they can't get Vere, so they're going to get someone important to him. First time through, when you see this, you're assuming that the girl's dead. And we come back from that commercial break with the truth coming out.
Now everybody knows.
Yep.
Now everybody knows. Vere is not killing the Narn. He's funneling them through Centauri Prime and out to the other worlds to freedom.
Oh, yeah. Vere is huge here.
Yeah. Lando is not fine with that.
Yeah, Lando's the only one there that's not impressed.
You know, and JP talked about the change in Lando's expression, the way he goes from glee to just downright anger.
Right. He's so proud of his protege, and then he's not.
Yeah. So why are the Narn attacking Vere? I think JP threw out the theory as far as the official reports of them being dead, possibly.
But I think it's we know it's something different.
Yeah. In fact, we find out right now, Vere's good day is kind of turning bad or turning worse. And Lindisty is determined to cheer him up. She has a surprise for him.
Oh, boy.
And her faith in him is completely blind. Well, so are her comments about the Narn, because she goes from naive to creepy very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you've got this recorded for us, right, Jim?
Yeah.
And stop. You can open your eyes now.
It's dark.
Lights, gently, please.
Lindisty.
I knew you'd be surprised.
Alive.
Yes, of course. I saved him for you. I almost didn't. After all, he did intend to kill me. But I set a little trap for him. I have been trained quite well. I almost finished him all myself, but...
Why did he want to kill you?
At first, I wasn't sure. But then, when he was unconscious, I studied him for a very long time. Until I remembered. I saw him on Narn. My father and I went there after the war. He was in charge of culling the herds.
Culling the herds?
Oh, yes. Quite necessary for pacification. He would test their villages and find out which populations had the greatest tendency toward aggression. You cure future aggression by cutting out that part of the gene pool. Our soldiers would bring them in, 10, 20 at a time, and we put them to sleep. It was more humane than they deserved, really. But Father's always been overly charitable. Sometimes we'd find whole villages where the aggression was just too deeply rooted and we had to take it all out. You could see the flames rising up into the night like brilliant flowers embracing the spring. Bright buds opening and spreading wider. This one, I remember, he escaped with his brother from one of the villages we purified. That must be why they tried to kill me.
Now, I will comment here saying that the character may have been a bubblehead, but this actress was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's not creepy, it's just chilling, and it leaves you completely disturbed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is not...
This is Margaret Sanger, the pivot of civilization.
Oh, Nazi philosophy, for crying out loud.
That was, well, pivot of civilization and Nietzsche. The other one I was going to bring up is that this is going straight to Nietzsche, Sanger, the Eugen. It's where they got their... It's where Hitler drew some of his inspiration and solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not as ditzy as what she started out as.
Absolutely.
And all the phrases in there are horrible. You know, culling the herd, not like he's really aware, done this hundreds of times mm-hmm. before. You know, it's
I've done it hundreds of times right. myself.
Way more humane than they deserved.
Right. That
was another one.
Putting them to sleep.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, the thing about it, the thing that really, for me, that really just chilled the most was the phrase about the, like, little blooming flowers in the night.
Yeah.
Just when they're destroying entire towns.
And then so matter-of-factly at the end. Well, maybe that's why they're trying to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Duh. Yeah. I wonder.
And I'm thinking, you know, it's back to the bubblehead, right? Is she that dumb or naive? Or does she think Veer might be that dumb or naive? Or both?
Or both.
Oh, I guess that's why they're trying. Maybe that's why they're trying to kill me.
Well, with her opinion that they're not really aware.
Yeah. It's just, that's just horrible all the way around.
And if that's not a big enough knife in the gut for Veer, you know, in the very next scene, we have Londo talking about how she's a true Centauri.
You know, I seriously don't think Londo actually believes what he's saying. I find that hard to believe.
It makes it hard enough to talk about future seasons.
Well, yeah. But, you know, you think back, and when they were bombarding Narn with the mass drivers, and the look on Malari's face as he stood watching that happen on that ship.
And you can see him thinking, this is my fault.
Exactly. And I mean, that may be his official position, but I don't know if deep down inside he actually feels that way.
I think at the beginning of the series, he might have believed it. He might have actually believed it. But I think that is because he hasn't had to look the reality of it in the face.
Well, see, then too, I have to wonder if my opinion is not colored because I like Londo and I don't want to believe that he would be that evil, and I do not like Lindisty, and I have no trouble believing that she's just absolutely a horrible, horrible person.
Makes me wonder if there's a threshold in Londo that's being... We're not being shown what it is, but when he sees a world destroyed, that upsets him. Especially if he thinks it's his fault. But a Narn or two...
Yeah.
Or dozens, or maybe even hundreds or thousands, not... you know, that's okay. You know, somewhere in his mind, and we don't really know what it is here, but I wonder if he's okay with some of it by volume, or some of it if it's not directly his fault because of...
Or when it's numbers on a book.
Right. And it kind of exposes or suggests that, like we've talked about before, we're watching the transformation of this character. So this could be a piece of that, where he's gone from being just what he appeared to be on the surface back at the beginning to something that's not quite that man anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not 100% change. He's stuck in the middle somewhere.
Right. Yeah, and I think that change started with the point where Jim describes the bombing of Narn, but it's definitely not complete yet. Well, Veer gets a rather stern lecture from Londo. He's called in some favors and fixed things. Basically, this hasn't happened. And the blame is put squarely on the Mimbari. Because, as he puts it, the last ambassador to Mimbar also went native.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the free thinkers, anarchists, Mimbari comment.
Yeah.
And remember, the embassy had been abandoned on Mimbar for quite some time. That's how Veer got the position. Mm-hmm. And I like the phrase about how Veer fell on his beak.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
One positive. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Londo's going to re-educate him now.
Right. Well, I think we're starting to see some sort of hints as what kind of Emperor Veer's going to be. At least some faint foreshadowings there. And now we come into the wrap-ups. It turns out Susan's going to keep Veer's smuggling operation going at least as long as she can. And she actually puts a face to Abraham Olinconi.
That's a good one. That's almost better than that bear.
Yeah, well, for those, I'm assuming everyone's seen the episode, but it's Sheridan as Centauri.
I don't think Sheridan's real impressed with that when he first sees it.
No.
No.
I think it's okay when he realizes who that is and what it represents. But yeah, his reaction at first, he looked insulted.
Yes.
Yep. And it does put her dreams to rest by essentially becoming the official Babylon 5 sneak in residence.
No. You know, it's good she's going to take it over. It's already in place. It's already something that's working, and Veer's not going to be allowed to run it himself, so why not?
Nope. Yeah. And this actually kind of sets up something we see some more of in season 4. It'll be a similar sort of underground.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, Veer and Lindesti's goodbye. He's still smitten. And they both think the other person has some sort of problem and that they will hopefully can get better.
Yeah, he looks hurt.
Fortunately, Veer doesn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what. People like her, I don't think, get better. She doesn't have the capacity for that.
And you've got to ask yourself, what programmed her to be that way?
Just living it. She doesn't know anything else.
She was a participant with her parents, right? With her dad.
Exactly. Exactly. That is all she knows.
Mm-hmm. How is she different from any other Centauri?
I don't know if we can know that.
Yeah. Maybe she's just numb to the thought of death. She does not see Narn as living beings. They're not mm-hmm. sentient beings as far as she's concerned. It's no worse than trapping mice, you know?
Well, she pretty much puts it on that level,
yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
But it's still the difficult question. She's really not saying anything that's outside the basic premises behind what almost any other Centauri would say. And Londo's darn near said as much at points.
But I have never heard another Centauri, and I don't think we ever do hear another Centauri, describe the funeral pyres as flowers blooming in the night. Okay, she's romanticizing this thing.
Yeah, that's what a lot of the German people did. And this is one of the areas where science fiction just shines as a genre, because you don't get to dig into a theme like this the way it was done here anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a really ugly thing safe to talk about without emotionally loading it. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's right. Emotional and it's loaded, but not in the sense that people feel they have to check out.
Exactly. And oh my gosh, Vera's final comment. What relationships don't have their ups and downs?
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know of any.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of the business.
Indeed it is.
Vera's got the Roman Empire-sized roller coaster ups and downs with that one, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that actually is, and this is what Joe calls lightening it up after the heavy episodes.
Well, and there are a number of lighter moments, and there's some disturbing heavy stuff.
There's some lighter moments, and Joe's famous for just whacking you behind the back. And that's exactly what he does here. So that, good folks, wraps up Sick Transit Veer.
Yep, there it is. That one's...
Final thoughts, guys?
It's a good episode.
It was. It was a very good episode and enjoyable in a lot of ways and thought-provoking in other ways. And not too many implications that fit into the story arc itself, other than Delenn and Sheridan's relationship. It seems to be moving to new levels.
And there were a few seeds planted for future seasons, but nothing big and blunt, but just good stuff to set a mood, a tone. Yeah.
Though I would argue that the whole character development and the character transitions are very much a big part of the story arc.
Yeah. And we got way more information about Centauri anatomy than we ever wanted.
There's six?
Yeah. Wow.
Poor Susan.
Oh, gosh.
Yep.
Yeah.
So at any rate, that's about all I got.
JP, closing thoughts?
Nothing other than what I shared. I like the little nuggets in this that help connect what's happened to the next couple of seasons. I said it wasn't blunt, so it's just nice looking back to see.
Right.
The little hooks that are there.
Well, what do we have next week then, Jim?
Well, we have episode, third season, number 13, A Late Delivery from Avalon, with a huge guest star.
Oh, yeah. We can go ahead and say who it is. Course. Michael York.
Michael York, yep. And
he's got some amazing people to be in these, in the series over its run.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And, yeah, the next episode, Late Delivery, is kind of a fun episode in a lot of ways. We get some really neat interactions between characters, and I kind of enjoy this one.
Yeah, Late Delivery from Avalon. It's a Marcus episode for the Marcus fans.
Oh, and Jakar's in there too.
Yep.
So,
I don't want it. I'll have to make sure I watch it without my wife around, because she keeps on the Marcus episode. She keeps threatening to hijack the show someday.
Well, so well,
folks,
gentlemen, do we have any?
I think we've talked it out.
Did we have any boom today?
No boom. We didn't even have any boom shakalaka
or any tarara boom da.
But are we gonna have any boom tomorrow?
There's always boom tomorrow. Always.
Neat.
Always.
I'll take some boom.
Boom. Boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom.
That's a wrap.
Yep. Good night, everybody.
Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
All right. Good night, y'all.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at the Babylon Project podcast babylonproject@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.